Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming from our new studios in New York City, and I welcome you. You can watch today's program by going to Ustream channel and then just look for Gary Null. Also, we'd like to welcome all the different stations that are carrying this program around the United States. Today, we're going to examine how beet juice, very inexpensive, easy to get, can help give your body more energy and very important if you are prone to a heart attack or stroke. It can help prevent that. And how spicy food allows you to live a longer life. Very good information. And how physical activity, just getting out and working out, can help prevent sadness and suicidality in the United States. Also, I'll give you the latest report on how many deaths from nutritional supplements. And the Journal of the American Medical Association highlights vaccination risks in low birth weight infants, and we've got a lot of those in the United States. And also antidepressants. Wow, they're at epidemic level in people, and young people in particular. Well, the latest study, they do cause violent behavior. And I'll have in the second part of our program Glenn Ford, executive editor of the Black Agenda Report, and son of the famous disc jockey Ruby the Deuce Rutherford, and the first black television host to have a non-gospel radio deep in the South. And so he's going to be here, and we're going to challenge the Wall Street Journal's apologetic support of law enforcement violence and the training of police to oppress African Americans. Also, following in line with that, the eyes in the sky, 60 U.S. police departments have asked for drone certification. Also today, the mass animal die-off with 100% death rate baffles scientists. Something is going terribly wrong on planet Earth. J.D. Heise is going to explore this, because who knew that 120,000 animals died all at the same time, and they don't know why. Quote, I've worked in veterinary disease all my career, and I've never seen 100% death. And this is published in the magazine Nature. Quote, we had a herd of 60,000, and they all died. That is extraordinary. You think? Well, yes, it's bad. And in California, for all the people listening, we have thousands listening in California, the drought that you have out there, it's a mega drought. Here's the latest from NASA. Decades-long mega drought looms for entire U.S. as Lake Powell runs dry. I'll get into that on Environmental Report. And time permitting, how to be ultra-spiritual with J.P. Sears and George Carlin on all the stuff that we have. As you see, we have an awful lot to cover. Let's begin. I remember doing a documentary, and always when you do a documentary, the first part of the doing a documentary is you do your research. You have to know what is the story and allow the information you collect to be the story. And I was interviewing over a six-month period a lot of parents, and it was something specific. I was asking, what was your child like before they were on the antidepressants? What were they like once they were on? These were all parents that shared something in common. Their kids hurt other people or committed suicide. They were all okay before. There was no aggression. There was no suicidal thoughts. But once on the antidepressants, everything changed. And when I ask, well, why did you put your kids on the antidepressants to begin with? What were they doing that was so wrong? Well, looking back, it was the wrong thing. I was a part of, one woman said this, she said, I was just stupid. I was a part of the herd. Everyone's kids in the suburban area where we grew up and our kids lived and played together with the other kids, they were all on some form of psychiatric medication. It was normal. So when the school teacher said, your kid's not paying attention in class, your kid is agitated, your kid is fidgety, we thought that when the teacher said they have ADD or ADHD, or the school psychologist said it, then who are we to say no? So they put them on the drugs. And by the way, when I interviewed these people and I asked, would you like to see an experiment? Yeah. So I brought one of the people into the room, a 17-year-old young man, and I said, so you've been diagnosed with ADHD, yes. How many of your friends, most of my friends are diagnosed also, we're all on Ritalin or some other drug. Do you have any classes you like, any teachers you like? Yeah. How do you do in those classes? Do great. Good grade? Yeah. Do you fidget, look out the window, get distracted, try to text? No. Do you have classes you're bored with? You're bored with the topic or how it's taught or the teacher? Yeah. How do you do in those classes? Not so good. And that's where you distract yourself? Yes. Now, when you get out of class, are you bored? Never. You have a lot to do? Yeah. A lot of social media? Yeah. So, in effect, the teachers, the curriculum, the school, the environment is having to compete with your outside stimulated environment. Well, I hadn't thought about that. When you get home, do you pay attention to things you like doing? Yes. Do you do those well? Yes. Now, mind you, the parents are sitting there while I'm talking, having this conversation. So I said, and one, it was a medical doctor, I said, doctor, do you know of any medical condition that is episodic to a person's interest? No. So, for example, if you have cancer, you can't have cancer when you're feeling you don't like the company you're with or the conversation you have, but otherwise the rest of the day you have no cancer. It's not in your body. Or you have arthritis, and you can turn it on and off based upon how happy you are? No. Then why would you assume that your child has something when for that part of the day that they're engaged, interested, excited, challenged, they're completely normal? Otherwise, they're bored. This is not a brain chemical imbalance. This is not an issue of biochemistry being adjusted by a psychoactive stimulant in the same class as heroin and cocaine. This is behavioral. That's where the parents and the teachers have to sit down and talk with a child and ask them what they are interested in, what they're not, and try to see how you can work with their interest and energy instead of medicating them. I give you that as background because I went on to produce a documentary called The Drugging of Our Children. And Dr. Joseph Marcola recommended it, and just overnight 1 million people watched it. It was number one in the world on Google of all their films. And a lot of school teachers began to relate to the topic, and I suggested that the teachers, who are also victims because they're victims of the propaganda, why don't they become educated on the dangers of antidepressants, antipsychotic medication? Some have done that. In fact, I've been invited to lecture in some schools on Long Island, some charter schools in New Jersey, in Newark, where they don't accept any of the diagnosis unless the person has first gone through a holistic psychologist to see what's really going on. They don't automatically put them on drugs. Of course, there's a financial incentive for every school. They get money for every kid that gets on the drug. Big Pharma is all over this. This is the latest. This is from Oxford University, as reported in PLOS magazine, a major scientific magazine. Quote, younger people taking antidepressants are more likely to commit violent crimes. The researchers used a unique study design which aimed to avoid confounding factors by comparing the same individual's behavior while they were on and while they were off medications. The team used match data among 850,000 people prescribed the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, such as Prozac and Paxil. By the way, both drugs, I believe, should never be used by anyone under any conditions ever. In my personal opinion, you are doing your body extreme harm when you use these, and you're destroying kids' lives by using them. Quote, most of the age groups did not show increase in crime or violence in the 15 to 24-year-old group, but there was a 43% increase in the risk of committing violent crimes when they were on the drugs. Off the drugs, no crime. On the drugs, huge amount of crime. Involved in violent arrest, nonviolent convictions, arrest, non-fatal injuries, alcohol problems when they were taking the antidepressants. The results also showed that those who took lower doses had an increased risk of being violent. So, that's something we should pay attention to, because we have nearly 10% of all children in the United States on some form of psychiatric med. None of them need it, not one. We have toddlers, we have infants, we have babies, over 600,000 on these drugs. This is so wrong. It's wrong that we don't pay attention to how serious the problem is until you come home one day and your son is hanging and dead. Then suddenly you say, I didn't know it was a problem. But then again, we have problems with obesity, with diabetes in children, caused by the commodification of that child and the commercialization of everything that can sell to that child to have them eat everything. It's wrong. So, that said, in the next 12 months, I intend to open one center in all the boroughs of New York, five in New Jersey, five on Long Island, dedicated to helping people detoxify and rebalance using the resources of the community holistically. No meds, no medical procedures, but helping people get off these drugs and help them with the issues of life. It's a public health service, and it's well on its way to a reality. Now, also, as you know, everyone from Jimmy Kimmel to other misinformed, intentionally or not, media personalities are pro-vaccine, but so are many of the programs on Pacifica and their host, as is Mother Jones and virtually the entire left. It shows you that you may think you're bright, you're not. You think you have some command of the facts, you haven't done your homework. You sure do have a lot of hubris and arrogance, because you're absolutely convinced through self-righteous indignation, if you ever read these demented blogs that these people spend their whole day because they don't have a life on, that they attack the mothers and fathers who actually do their homework, almost always after their kids have been injured. And we're talking about over 2 million injured kids. You're talking about 4 million adults who became educated after the fact, and now they're concerned and don't want other parents to do the same thing they did. So instead of looking at their homework, looking at their research, interviewing their doctors, looking at the scientific studies to see, do these people have a point of view? They're simply backhanded by the left. You can expect it from the right, but you look at some sense of compassion, some sense, but none of that exists today. It's all a myth. Everything is a myth. There are nothing is real out there anymore. The Democrats, Republicans, you find more integrity on pimps on 42nd Street than the entire parties. I trust no politician, none, because to be a politician today, more often than not, you have to succumb to the idea that you are smarter than other people, or you're willing to take responsibility for the choices you make, even though they're the ones who have to pay the cost. I haven't seen a single politician apologize for anything that's been done. The deaths in Iraq, Afghanistan, Yemen, the massive problems we have in the Ukraine, the coups, the change of governments,
our medical industrial complex, our energy cartels, the overuse of petrochemicals, saying you're part of the 1% and 99%. By the way, I'm going to deal with that clown issue tomorrow. I promise you I'm going to do a very intemperate discussion of my feelings about Occupy Wall Street, one of the most misguided, immature, selfish, self-absorbed, narcissistic movements I've ever seen, and failed completely because they refused to respect any other movement where legitimate concerns using a lot of human suffering and sacrifice, from the civil rights movement to the feminist movement to the animal rights movement, were all simply cast aside. I'm going to deal with that tomorrow in my discussion upstate when we start a new movement, and with people who are a little more mature and have thought through the issues a little clearer. In any case, when we look at almost everything that we're part of today, better look deeper than what you're looking, or you won't see the truth in anything. So those who are actually challenging the safety of vaccines, it's not because they have nothing from which they're making their challenge. They've done their homework. It's the pro-vaccine people, the doctors, the nurses, the pharmacists, the legislators, brain dead as they are on every issue, except how to make money, get reelected, and who they have to sell their soul to do it. They're the ones who are misinformed, and yet they're the ones who are the policymakers, and they're the ones who are the guardians of the sacred truth. This is from the Journal of the American Medical Association, the Bible of American medicine. A new study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association Pediatrics provides evidence that extremely low-weight birth infants run a higher risk of suffering from adverse events such as fever, breathing problems, apnea, abnormally slow heart rate, bradycardia, and fever soon after being vaccinated. An even more serious and potentially deadly complications detected was sepsis, which is an overwhelming immune response to a bacterial infection that can cause organ failure, and does. According to the research, these complications, quote, present a diagnostic dilemma for physicians, end quote, which could potentially lead to delaying vaccinations. Now, they examined 348 neonatal intensive care units, and they did this analysis, and they studied 14,000 of these low-weight baby, and they examined a total of 48,000 vaccinations. And here's the takeaway message. On the one hand, Orthodox medicine's high priests have written, and hence it is to be, that low-weight babies, which are epidemic in America, it's a danger to vaccinate them. You can kill them. And yet not a single one of them will be prevented from being vaccinated, because once you're in the medical paradigm, there is no reason used. More on that on an upcoming documentary I'm doing. I'm doing a scorched earth documentary that will just, it will peel off every layer of pretense and myth about the efficacy, safety, and value of American medicine. If you thought death by medicine, if you thought the war on health, if you thought prescription for disaster were tough, wait till you see the new one I've got coming at you. Oh, 12 of them coming at you. 12, one per month. I've been busy and focused my attention on how many people are dying who don't need to, or suffering who shouldn't. And now it's the babies. So I just gave you a report. Do you think any hospital, any nurse, any physician will go in and say, what are the underlying complications in this pregnancy and this birth? Now, we shouldn't be vaccinating, because if we do, we can end up causing organ failure. Ain't going to happen. Just won't happen. And by the way, to every doctor listening, every doctor in America, I offer you a legitimate challenge. And I offer you an opportunity to come on this program and debate me, just you and I. I don't need anyone to debate for me. Show me the legitimacy of giving any child that is born within an hour of birth a hepatitis B vaccine if the mother is tested negative for hepatitis. Show me the science. I don't care about your beliefs. Your beliefs are worthless to me and the patient. Show me the science. You say you're using scientific medicine, I'm saying you're using quackery. I'm saying you're killing people. You're the biggest murderers on the planet today. You're killing more people, innocent people in America each year than Al-Qaeda and ISIS combined times 10. I've just given you a challenge. Show me I'm wrong. You present your evidence, I'll present mine. Show me where these vaccines are needed. Show me where they can prevent a disease. Show me where the baby's immature immune system that doesn't have antibodies, and now you're supposed to give them antibodies. How are you going to give an antibody, a synthetic antibody, when there's no antibodies there and there's no virus or bacteria there? I'd like to see how this works. I'd like to see how you explain the insanity of our current vaccine schedule. But you have a forum, and this is a large forum. This is the largest listened-to radio program for progressive minds in the world. So come on and share your points of view. You'll be treated with respect, and you'll have your chance to give your point of view. And if you feel uncomfortable coming alone, bring 10 friends with you, all doctors, all professors, all board certified. I don't have a problem with that. It'll still just be me and the facts. That's how much contempt I have for what is passing as our healthcare system. It is a death maintenance system. And the left is a supportive part of it. Shame on them. But then again, you can't shame them. Here's how bad it is. From Martha Rosenberg, from Op-Ed News. FDA nominee, this is the top person in American health, more powerful than the Surgeon General, the Commissioner of the FDA, Food and Drug Administration, thinks being a pharma consultant is, quote, a very good thing. Imagine a doctor who, quote, served as a director, officer, partner, employee, or advisor, consultant, or trustee for Genentech and reports 23 financial links to drug companies, including stock ownership, being FDA commissioner. A doctor who defends Merck's Vioxx behavior, which cost what? Originally, it was 60,000 dead Americans from this one drug over 4 years. Now we've seen a revised report that says 500,000 Americans, 500,000, half a million, died from one drug, and not a single person was either criticized, chastised, punished at all. The drug company paid some billions of dollars, and the stock went up. The man who ran the company got a bonus. Where else in America but America could you kill upwards of 500,000 people, half a million people, and get a raise? But it happened. That's a reality. Now, this is the doctor who's being recommended, who defended Merck and Vioxx to be the commissioner of the FDA. Quote, many of us consult with the pharmaceutical industry, which I think is a very good thing. They need ideas, and then the decision about what they do is really up to the person who is funding the study, end quote. That was from PBS. That was from the upcoming FDA commissioner. The Obama administration has nominated Duke University researcher Robert Califf to be FDA commissioner, ending all pretenses of a firewall between the drug industry and the government agency that is supposed to regulate it. So, this is a Reuters report. The medical experts ask how someone who helps drug companies market their products could possibly be considered as the nation's chief watchdog over unsafe medications. We now have our answer. When Margaret Hamburg was named FDA commissioner in 2009 instead of Califf, many hoped her background as deputy health commissioner for New York City would purge industry influences, especially when she appointed Joshua Sarfstein deputy commissioner, who also had a public health background. But hopes were dashed when Sarfstein left within 2 years and Hamburg soon moved to loosen conflicts of interest rules governing who could sit on the advisory committees that recommended drug approvals. In fact, Hamburg appointed Califf FDA deputy commissioner earlier this year before stepping down. But there's more. Califf is not the only government official with blatant industry ties. 4 years ago, the Chronicle of Higher Education reported that longtime director of the National Institutes of Mental Health, Thomas Insel, assured the University of Miami's medical school dean if they hired his friend, government money, our money, would not be denied to his school. why would it be denied? The friend, Charles Nemiroff, was found to have said of much unreported pharma income after congressional investigation. A $9.3 million National Institute of Health grant he managed was suspended. At the time of the cronyism and promise of flowing government funds, Incel was leading a National Institute of Health effort to stamp out conflicts of interest, reports the Chronicle. Animal lovers know, as the former director of the Yerkes Regional Primate Center, whose experiments recall those of Henry Harlow, who created Iron Maiden, Mothers, and Pit of Despair for baby primates. Well, that was another person who was, we'll forget that person for now. It just shows that the FDA is capable of being run now by completely 100% pro-big pharma people. Why don't they just get rid of the word FDA? It's meaningless, Food and Drug Administration, and just simply say big pharma. That's it, because they control everything. Is there any protests against it? None. Any demonstrations? Any letter-writing campaign? None. But it means that every bad drug imaginable that the pharmaceutical industry wants to put on the market, it will. If they came up with 1,000 new vaccines, there's 263 right now being introduced. If they came up with 1,000 more and they were terrible with deadly side effects, they would still not be rejected by the new FDA. The FDA is now 100% controlled by Big Pharma, as the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, has been controlled for a long time. Now, you would think that there would be some concern about how many people die because of the use of these medications. There is none. No one is ever held accountable. No company, no person. Whenever they have to withdraw a product, they are asked to do so voluntarily. And by the way, Vioxx was never ordered withdrawn by the FDA. Never. What about supplements? Boy, they have a hard time with supplements. They're really angry at supplements. They're angry at organic. They're angry at healthy. They love GMOs and drugs. So we decided to take a look at all deaths from a government's official registry and look at the journal article that was published in Clinical Toxicology, and also look at all 2.2 million poisonings reported to 55 American Association of Poison Control Centers. And the American Association of Poison Control was the body responsible for maintaining the National Poison Data System, a database of information with more than 60 million poison exposures reported since 1983. So, nutrition-based health advocates, well, there's zero deaths of any type of dietary nutritional supplement. That's zero from amino acids, herbal or mineral products. And from Big Pharma, hundreds of thousands per year. And yet the emphasis, at least 128,000 last year, 1.9 million hospitalizations, 2.74 million adverse reactions. That's in the last 12 months. So on the one hand, we put the energy on attacking vitamins, but never once questioned 128,000 unnecessary deaths, 109 million hospitalizations, 2.7 million adverse effects. So that's the power of controlling the media. Now, for those of you who want to be less sad about life, try exercising. This is from the University of Vermont, published in the Journal of American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. They report that exercise for 4 or more days per week is associated with a 23% reduction in both suicidal ideation and the attempt in bullied adolescents. So you're going to feel a whole lot better if you simply exercise each day. And according to Tulane University, a good research on more than 500,000 individuals over 7 years published in the British Medical Journal showed that those spices that give a little extra taste to your, like chili peppers and cayennes and turmerics, quote, the results indicate that participants who ate foods flavored with chili peppers every day reduced their risk of premature dying by 14%. as compared to those who ate not at all. So there's ingredients in your spices, and that keep your body alive. Black pepper, garlic, horseradish, and ginger also will do that. So get some spice into your life and live a longer life. And finally, beetroot juice improves sprinting and decision-making during exercise. University of Exeter in the United Kingdom, published in the European Journal of Applied Physiology, quote, rugby players take note, drinking high nitrate beetroot juice improves both sprint performance and decision-making during prolonged intermittent exercise, such as football, etc. That would also be true for cycling, rollerblading, power walking, and swimming. That's the latest on health and nutrition. Please stay with us. Back in a moment with more information. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world who are listening right now. I'm Gary Nall, broadcasting from our beautiful new studios in New York City. In a moment, we're going to go to our guest, Glenn Ford, to talk about the Wall Street Journal's big apology for law enforcement violence and training, and we're going to challenge that. I also want to mention that there's going to be a Peace and Prosperity Conference and rally. It's Saturday and Sunday. I'm speaking tomorrow, 10 a.m. And it's going to be at 42 Crown Street in Colonial Kingston, New York, on the Hudson River, the center of town in the historical part of Kingston, exit 19 off the New York Thruway, about an hour and 40 minutes to Manhattan. And you can get more information on the conference going to trendsjournal.com. We will have Ralph Nader there, Professor Robert Thurman, Gerald Salante, Cindy Sheehan, and myself. And that's on Sunday, and then that starts at noon. So in the middle of Kingston, which is a small community, easy to find, that's on Sunday at noon, trying to show a way to demilitarize the American police, demilitarize the American footprint around the globe, and giving you some important and useful practical insights. If you've never been to a demonstration, it's empowering, and also ours is going to get some results because we have a lot of people around the world, hundreds of millions, who are interested in positive change, and they know that it can only happen if they become engaged. So that's the latest thing there. And let us go now to our guest who is standing by, Glenn Ford. I gave you his bio earlier in the program. Nice to have you with us today, Glenn.
Oh, good to be here with you.
Glenn, I have a lot of concern about the violence that we see. In fact, I'm posting on a daily basis on my Facebook some incidences that never make the media. In fact, most don't make the media. And it's about people who have not been convicted of any crime, not even suspected of a crime, stop and search, generally profiled, and yet we're supposed to be believing that that's all for our best interest. So before we turn to the racial profiling that has increased dramatically in the nation's law enforcement agencies, I'd like you to respond to a recent Wall Street Journal article that was excessively apologetic and defensive about public violence against police while ignoring the horrendous track record of police violence against citizens and against the African-American and Latino community in particular. And often we can try to ignore mainstream articles by the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times and the major TV news networks because they are fully corporatized and regurgitate the official political party lines. However, we can observe underneath propaganda trends and denialism that warrant our attention that require immediate response. And I felt this is true of Wall Street article about what the reporter Heather McDonald was calling a breakdown of basic respect for law enforcement. The reporter, however, categorically ignores the long and growing history of unwarranted and unprovoked police violence that has contributed to Americans and black communities' lack of respect for today's police, and certainly Ferguson and the escalating murder of innocent African Americans by police and wrongful SWAT raids on homes and families and all the corruption behind our private prison system in general provide sufficient reason for us to challenge the respect towards state, local, and national police. So first, after reading the Wall Street Journal article, and my concern is that it will lay out a rationale that we should not accept. And in fact, you can almost anticipate will become mainstream throughout corporate and political aligned media. Would you deconstruct its primary message for us?
Well, first of all, in terms of respect, the public servants, and that's what police are supposed to be, are supposed to serve and protect and also respect the public. The public is not obligated to respect the police. That's not the public's job. The police, however, do have a job to serve and protect and respect the rights of the public. And, for example, in New York City, stop and frisk was declared by a court to be unconstitutional in its application by New York City police. So New York City police were not respecting the public, and they were not respecting the Constitution of the United States. So they were not just disrespecting the overwhelmingly black and brown and young public that they were stopping and frisking, basically harassing and sucking into the system. They were respecting the entire nation in terms of its constitution. The Wall Street Journal's it's difficult to call this a story, and it cannot be categorized as journalism. It does not even deal with the most basic fact of its premise, that somehow there has been some a wave of violence, not disrespect, which is hard to define, but actual violence against police, and that flies in the face of statistics, the statistics gathered by the FBI, and those stats show that in the 35-year period from 1980 through last year, through 2014, an average of 64 cops were killed feloniously. That means not by other cops mistakenly shooting other cops or cops shooting themselves or in traffic accidents, but killed by civilians in the course of civilians committing a felony. An average for that 35-year period was that 64 cops would be killed. Well, we are way, way, way below that average. And in fact, in 2013, it was the lowest in that whole 35-year period. Only 27 cops got killed feloniously. If we're looking at the figures for this year, it looks like we're on a track for 35 cops to get killed this year, way below the average of 64. And last year, when 51 cops were killed, that's still way below the average for the past 35 years. So just as crime is at record lows, felonious deaths of cops is at a record low, and the Wall Street Journal has descended to a record low of ignoring basic facts as it launches an attack against the black incipient movement against police violence by alleging that police violence is up with not a fact to stand on.
There's a statement in the article, quote, "The irony is that the historic reduction of U.S. crime since the 1990s was predicated on police singling out African Americans for protection." Then goes on to state that police focused on African American neighborhoods and communities because, quote, the reporter said, the cops were there because they believe that black lives matter. Your thoughts?
Well, there were two things there. This idea that the cops are protecting black folks, and that's why there are so many of them, and they violate so many rights in their zealotry, their zeal to protect us, is one that's certainly not shared by the people who are supposedly being protected. Because although black folks suffer more than almost any other group except Native Americans from crime, living in conditions that breed crime, although that is true, every poll has shown consistently for many decades, it's never changed, that black folks are more opposed to excesses of force by the police than any other group because they experience it more. So the people who are supposedly being protected by the police don't agree with that rationale. That's what's most important. If we're talking about respect, then the Wall Street Journal ought to respect the opinions of the folks that it claims it's writing on behalf of. It's just entirely bogus.
A final thought. After another piece missing, and it was the subject of your recent article this week on the Black Agenda Report, is the radical change that has been taking place in how police are trained today. Some members of local or city police forces are even traveling to Israel to be trained by Mossad and Israeli military experts. And local police agencies are piling up military weapons and being trained in military tactics for fighting a foreign enemy rather than preserving peace in American towns and cities. And what else can you share about the dramatic changes that have occurred, how police candidates are trained today, and what have been the consequences? As you stated, it's not the lack of training that breeds killer cops, but the training itself.
Yes, we have had intensified, constant, federally funded and directed training of police. That is, the policing in America has been a national, federal policy since the late 60s, with the passage of an omnibus crime bill that set up the Law Enforcement Assistance Administration. And that began the funneling of billions of dollars in equipment and the training that goes along with equipment and other kinds of training to local police forces. So local police forces were vastly expanded, largely with federal money, and they got all kinds of gear with federal money, and they underwent a kind of uniform training with federal money. And so what we see in terms of policing in the United States is a product of the training and the homogenization of the police forces by the federal government under this mass incarceration regime that was initiated post-1968. The reason that the assaults, the insults and assaults against black America by the cops are so similar, they're identical, they're uniform throughout the country, north, south, east, and west, is because the cops are being trained in uniform types of ways. We don't have, just as you cannot say that the American criminal justice system is broke because it has incarcerated 2.4 million people, that is not the correct logic. If the system was designed to incarcerate masses of people, then it is quite successful, the most successful one in the world. It's not broke. It is evil in its conception. And if the police so uniformly across the country are disrespecting and abusing black citizens, it's because that's what they're trained to do. That training regime has been successful in its outcome. It has created police forces from Mississippi to Maine to the state of Washington that all behave in the same way, employing the same kinds of tactics and violating the same rights. So the solution is no more training for police than the solution to crime is more prisons. We have to talk about what the mission of the police is. And when we decide what the mission is, then police can be trained according to that new mission.
Right.
What their current mission is and what it's been for the last more than 40 years is mass incarceration. We need to change that mission, and that means changing the training, not more training for that damn mission.
Glenn Ford, thank you very much for sharing your insights. And Glenn Ford's Black Agenda Report is heard on the Progressive Radio Network each week. Thanks a lot, Glenn.
Thank you so much.
I'm Gary Nall. We're going to have a talkback segment now. You can call in on any of the issues we've discussed today on the program, 888-874-4888. And let's take a moment and hear about the IRS seizing an innocent grandma's bank account. This is a part of that big asset forfeiture that's going on, and it's increasing into the billions of dollars that they're taking people who've committed no crime whatsoever, haven't been charged, haven't been given a ticket, nothing. They just decide you've got something they want, and they take it. Now try to get it back. Listen up on this.
My name is Carol Henders, and I've owned Mrs. Lady's Mexican Food for 38 years. On May 22nd, 2013, when I had just finished having breakfast with my grandkids and we were going to do our crossword puzzle, I got a knock on the door, and I went, and it was two IRS agents who informed me that they had closed my business bank account and seized all my money, which was almost $33,000.
Federal law requires banks to report cash deposits greater than $10,000. The federal government used civil forfeiture to seize Carol's bank account, claiming that by making frequent small cash deposits, she was evading that requirement. The government calls this structuring and wants to keep all of Carol's money without even charging her with a crime.
How can I be committing a crime by depositing money I worked for and deposited in my own bank account? In 30 years of banking with the same bank, no one ever mentioned that I was making my deposits wrong.
Civil forfeiture turns the principle of innocent until proven guilty on its head. Once your property is taken, it's up to you to prove your own innocence to get it back in expensive litigation against the federal government.
I had to scramble, I had to borrow, I had to beg, I had to put money on my credit cards, things I've never done before. It's been a year from hell.
If the government had asked Carol why she frequently makes cash deposits, they would have learned that her restaurant doesn't accept credit cards and she doesn't want to keep a lot of cash on the premises. Instead, the government is treating Carol like a criminal just for running an honest cash business.
I've decided to fight this fight because I didn't do anything wrong. They took my money, and I don't think they should have the right to do that. At least they should have to prove that I did something wrong before they take my money. And I want to stand up for it because I don't want it to keep going on.
That's just the beginning. I'll do more on this on upcoming programs. To Dr. Stephen Combe, medical doctor, you wrote a letter, and I read your letter about what is happening with Pacifica. And you wrote it to the executive director who is leaving Pacifica, Mr. Prophet John Prophet, after being there only for 4 months. And in here, you state the following, quote, "It was with a mixture of shock and sincere sadness that I read your resignation letter today. Pacifica has a way of chewing up and spitting out people with good hearts, especially those with a Pacific personality, people who are innocent, people who don't like doing things that wrong. To have announced your resignation after only 4 months is beyond troubling. There has to be a backstory to this." Then he goes on 4 pages to make suggestions. What I'm going to do on Tuesday evening, not on the noon hour, because quite simply, this program is syndicated and heard all over the world, and it's of virtually no interest to any other audience or any other station what the issues are with Pacifica and our sister station, WBAI. But it is important for people listening to BAI and Pacifica. And since I resigned from KPFK 2 years ago, and they're virtually insolvent today. I just got a letter today that they may not be on the air as of October 1st. And PFW in Washington, after 31 years, I am going to go on the record on Tuesday evening on the Progressive Commentary Hour with a group of current and historical board executives, officers within Pacific and national and local, to lay out what the problems are and possible solutions. So I'm devoting an entire hour to it. And by the way, it's far more serious than what anyone knows. That's one of the problems at Pacifica. There is no honesty. No one's ever honest about anything when it comes to telling the truth of why the foundation is in such turmoil and chaos. But there are some real serious issues. And when I say real serious, I mean real serious, the kind of serious that the public has not been told about. I will tell you the details, naming names and incidences on Tuesday night, 7 p.m. Progressive Commentary Hour. Now, to finish off our program today, there's two issues. First, the drought is going to get worse, a lot worse. So if you are thinking about sticking around in California, and unless you are in a place that has adequate water and therefore can continue your life without any interruption, fine, but that's not going to be the case for most people. Quote from Zero Hedge, with the number of people living in the United States Southwest and Central Plains and the volume of water they need having increased rapidly over recent decades, and with NASA scientists expecting these trends to continue for years to come, the current severe drought combined with the tapping of the Lake Powell's water at what many consider an unsustainable level has reduced its level to only about 42% of its capacity, forecasting that there is an 80% chance of an extended drought in the area, and this goes clear up to 2099, unless aggressive steps are taken to mitigate the impacts of climate change. The researchers said the results point to a challenging, remarkable drier future. And this was research from Cornell and Columbia Universities and NASA. Quote, the U.S. Southwest and Central Plains, that's about 17 states, are likely to be scorched by a decades-long mega drought. Okay, so, and one of the largest lakes out there, Lake Powell, is running dry. So keep that in mind wherever you anticipate being in the future. And finally, there's some extraordinary animal die-offs around the world that no one seems to know why. This is the latest, quote from J.D. Hayes, Natural News. A critically endangered species of antelope has been driven further to the brink of extinction following a mysterious and substantial die-off of its herd over the summer. The herd, which are native to regions of Russia, Mongolia, Kazakhstan, began dying during their calving period in May, and according to the report, just 12,000 died, and scientists do not know why. However, the deaths quickly accelerated to 120,000 dead. And, quote, I've worked in veterinary medicine all my career, and I've never seen 100% mortality, says Royal Veterinary College in the UK, who flew to the area to assist with efforts to make sense of the devastation. He told Nature magazine, quote, we had a herd of 60,000 aggregated, and they all died. That's extraordinary. So the question is why? And right now, no one has been able to figure it out, and they're dying. A whole population died in 7 days. So there's something going on. When we find out what it is, I'll let the audience know. But anytime you have that many die in that short a period of time, people should pay attention. Clearly, something is out of balance. And if it's out of balance for those animals, why not other species and even humans? So we have a lot coming up this weekend. I look forward to sharing a lot of positive insights tomorrow at 10 o'clock at my lecture up in Kingston and at 42 Crown Street. That's the Trends Research Institute. And then on Sunday at a rally, we'll have Ralph Nader. We'll have people who have been in movements for a long time, and this is a peace and prosperity conference, and we believe that with the tools we're using, we'll be able to have some positive impact. I look forward to sharing that with you. Have a nice weekend, everyone. Look forward to speaking with you again back here on Monday.
remember my first love affair. Somehow or another, the whole darn thing went wrong. But my mama had some great advice, so I thought I'd put it in the words of this song. I can still hear her saying, boy,
boy, boy,
oh, I see you sitting out there all alone, crying your eyes out, 'cause the woman that you love is gone. Oh, there's gonna be a whole lot of trouble in your life. Oh, so listen to me, get up off your knees, 'cause only the strong survive. That's what she said, only the strong survive. Only the strong survive. Yeah, you gotta be strong. You better hold on. Don't go.
And we have you, Treece Lee, coming up in 3 minutes. Before then, we have Lou Ann Panessi on the phone. Hi, Lou Ann.
Hello. Hi, Gary. Hi, everyone. I have two quick announcements. I wanted to just mention again, Gary, that we are interviewing people for our upcoming diabetes health support group. It'll be taking place for 8 weeks, starting not this Sunday, but the following Sunday. So I'm looking for people that have type 2 diabetes. I'm looking for people that can commit to 8 consecutive Sundays to meet and that are ready and willing to make fundamental changes in their lifestyle so that they can improve their health. So if you're interested in that, do give me a call, 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198. Additionally, Gary, we have our new location that we're at, and we have an office that we'd like to rent out, and we'd like to offer it to people that are willing to come in for any number of days during the week. We're interested primarily in talk therapists, psychotherapists, biofeedback practitioners, maybe acupuncturists, massage therapists. So if you're interested in renting an office for a very reasonable price, please do give me a call. Same number, 631-504-6198.
Okay, good. And again, I look forward to seeing a lot of you tomorrow and Sunday in Kingston, New York.